You're listening to VFN TV highlights at VFNKB.com. Enjoy.
Can you believe that? Think about this. Why are so many millennials socialists? What's their thinking? Social? They're living in a democracy and a republic, but they're thinking socialism. And it's actually democracy and a republic that brought them the college, their home, their success, the wealth, and all the things that are happening. What are the universities teaching our children? What are schools teaching our children? Because that would be the millennials. I'm Greg Lancaster, and joining me is John Ramos.
Hello.
Man, this is amazing when you think about, the question. I think Emily, is it Ekins?
Ekins. She's from the Cato Institute. Yeah. Uh-huh, she's being interviewed on Blaze TV, and she begins to break down and share, listen, the reason why these guys are so much into socialism is because they have a different picture, not an accurate picture. In fact, listen to Emily as she kind of breaks it all down for us.
Another thing, though, is that Scandinavia actually isn't socialist. And that's what's so funny is that young people today don't know what the word means. They don't know what it meant during the Cold War. They don't know what the technical definition is. And so for them, they think of socialism as just being, you know, Scandinavia, which is a, you know, a much bigger social welfare state. That's right. It's interesting because Tea Party supporters are actually the most likely group to be able to accurately define socialism when asked to. So, for instance, the actual definition of socialism is something like government ownership of the means of production. So, if you gave some kind of definition like that, then you were counted as having defined it accurately, according to a CBS New York Times poll. And 57% of Tea Party supporters could answer that correctly. Only 16% of millennials could, and only about, if I remember correctly, about 20% of Democrats could define it correctly. So, for whatever reason, Republicans have a better understanding as to what socialism.
That's so important to understand that, you know, that they have, the Scandinavian countries have a democracy, but they have a big heart in regards to democracy and a big, you know, welfare, being able to help people out, which is great.
We do too.
Actually,
we have
bigger because we're actually
we have more
you
money.
You could bet about those countries in one of our states. You
that's
know, you compare the population.
Is like the biggest laugh is like, oh, they're so generous. The United States is the most generous country in the world.
Well, that's so important to understand, John. When you think about this, that America, they always compare us to other countries, but America's 350 million folks. Canada is 38 million. Just 38 million.
Yeah.
That's the population of California, right?
35 million.
35 million. So you can't compare Canada because you have to provide this stuff for 350 million folks. That's a lot
of folks.
That's a lot of people. But the economy does that. But
you gotta
look at it because people are talking socialism, but they don't know what the definition is. We can see why they took away the definition of life.
And really, it's economy, right? It's really what we're talking about.
Yeah. So let's take a look at this, John. It's the definition of socialism. Read this to us. According to
Merriam-Webster.
Merriam-Webster, okay.
Any of various economic and political theories advocating collective or governmental ownership and administration of the means of production and distribution of goods.
Before you go to the next slide, look at this. It says, government ownership of your company.
Yeah.
People who don't own companies want the government to own your company.
Yeah. Production and administrative. So they're going to produce it and they're going to
administrate it.
They're pass
say,
it out, give it out.
This is how many cookies you need to make. This is how many burgers you need to make.
Well, this is what we're going to give you. You're going to get two cookies today. Or
right,
three cookies,
right, right.
These benefits.
Right, exactly. It's good. And the rest of it?
Okay. A system of society or group living in which there is no private property. China.
Yeah, China. I think about China that, you know, some of the people in the church in China that, you know, that you have a covert church that's there because the government is an atheistic communist government.
They're over the church.
Yeah, they're over the
it's
church.
It's a government church.
The CC, 3C church, whatever they call it. So the I wouldn't say the real church, but most of the church is the largest part of the church in the world, I believe, there in India, is undercover. So when they find out the church is meeting in a house in China, they take a bulldozer and just push the house over. If they have a business that you've been doing business in for the last 400 years in your family, you know, China, they can push that over because they own the land. They own the land, no ownership of land. And so when you have people like, what's the three-letter Brooklyn congresswoman that's talking
AOC.
About? AOC. AOC that stands for?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, she's, it's just totally opposite. She has no knowledge of America. She's not informed, and things she's saying, it just doesn't fit in America. But she can go to China, and she would fit right in. But they wouldn't even let her talk there.
Well,
in
it's
China.
A perfect case in point, because even as she was talking, she says she's a socialist, and she was into the Green Deal, and many people were rallying behind her. The Green Deal is an excellent thing. But when they actually took it to the Senate floor to actually vote for it, 57 opposed it, 47 decided to vote present, and zero said yay, yes.
But these are presidential candidates that are running for the Democratic DNC head of the party to compete against whoever President Trump is going to be in the election.
Right.
And they're going so far left. They're left of the left. Even the people that were left don't even claim that left
anymore.
But it's
even rhetoric. It's not even in reality because they were just talking like they were with her. But when it came to vote, they don't even believe it themselves.
100%, John, who said they were for it, didn't vote for it when Mitch McConnell brought it up for a vote in the Senate.
And that's why these millennials are confused. They're being duped. They're being lied to. They're seeing politicians say one thing, but in reality, they're not even voting for the very thing that they said they're supporting.
Speaking of lies, you know, now this particular investigation has come out, and Mueller has
Delusion, collusion is what he said.
There was no evidence of collusion, a crime for the president with Russia and all that. But the ratings of all these news broadcast stations, such as CNN, the reports are allegedly
MSNBC,
they've dropped
allegedly.
By, what was the thing, statistic?
40%,
their audience dropped by 40%, some reports said allegedly. And 24 hours of their program, all 24 hours, not any of them are over a million viewers. They've lost their viewership. Why? Because they lied to the people for so long. And that's why it's so important. It's why we do what we do at VFN TV and VFN Kingdom Business, is that somebody's got to say the truth. And not only are we talking truth, that you can always go wherever you're watching us. You can look below. There's always references to what we're saying, sources of where we got it from. When you see a book like I Will Fight, you know, my book, for example, right here, it has page after page of footnotes to let you know where you can that information came from.
That's
you know what I'm saying? So you would know where to actually get it from. And you need to always look. If the book doesn't have any references or sources to it, don't even read it, because it's somebody trying to change your mind, like what's taking place. So now we have students that have went into the education system because a lot of their parents said, you got to get a degree. You
got
to get a degree. You
got
to get a
degree.
That's
how it works.
And now they went to get the degree. They have this huge student debt, because the first thing that happens outside of Planned Parenthood talking to you on the campus is, hey, you can get a loan, low interest loan, you know, it's no problem at all.
You tell me who's not going to sign up for a loan when your frontal lobe's not fully developed yet.
Yeah, right.
That you don't have to qualify for, income's guaranteed.
Yes.
And all you have to do is sign for it.
Right.
These students are leaving with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 in debt that they have to pay for, I believe, 6 months after they graduate. It's not like when you get a chance.
And they sell you credit cards and Visa and MasterCard.
At 22 and 25%.
Well, we get back from the break. We're going to go firsthand. We're going to hear how students are talking about how their tuition is overcharging them. And listen, we want to comment below, write to us at friends@vfnkb.com.
Yes.
We want to hear, you can have student debt. You could be out of college for 30 years and you still can have student debt.
Yes, you can.
You could be going to your grave after a long extended life and still have student debt.
Yes,
it's just like
can.
Something that lingers on.
It doesn't go away.
Which means the universities are sucking people dry.
It's not just universities, because I tell you what, there's a lot of people you can owe. But you can never, never not pay the government. You got to pay that money back.
I thought it was a free country.
Oh, no. Okay. That loan's from Sally Mae. She wants her money back.
Students are wanting $15 an hour, right? John, take us there.
And $15 an hour, by the way, is $30,000 a year. I love how people just throw that money out.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's 30 grand. Well, Neil Cavuto is interviewing this student. They're having a million student march, I believe, to demand these rights, because they want free college, student debt cancellation, and minimum wage.
Is that all?
That's all. Okay. Well, $30,000.
Let's go there now.
Let's go there.
So what do you want here? What do you want?
So the movement, the Million Student March, is a movement for a more equitable and fair system of education, as opposed to the really corporate model that we have right now. So the three core demands of the National Day of Action are free public college, a cancellation of student debt, and a $15 an hour minimum wage for people who work on the campus.
And how's that going to be paid?
Great question. I mean, you know, so I'm not sure if you're talking on like a national level or at particular schools. I can sort of touch on both. At
well,
my
if you
university,
wanted all
Northeastern
that stuff,
university,
someone has to pick up the tab. Who would that be?
The 1% of people in society that are hoarding the wealth and really sort of causing a catastrophe that students are facing. I mean, we have a relationship right now where 1% of the population owns more wealth than the 99% combined.
All right, so it was interesting that she didn't know where the money was going to come from. After 4 years of college,
this is a shame because somebody told this young girl this, right. And she believed it, and she's on national television,
right.
Saying this stuff, and it's not true.
I believe the students, the people in their 20s and 30s are going to be so angry at the universities.
I believe so.
Because it's like if you get sold a product they don't deliver on the product, they should be liable for not
absolutely.
Giving them an education. For not giving them an education that allowed them to get a job.
Listen, I
don't you think
that yes.
class action suit, and they should take that up.
Listen, I was a part of that. I worked for in a season helping students go to school and pick their careers, and some of these students, they want to take these courses that are not going to result in them getting an actual real job when they graduate. Like, do you realize you're going to be taking on a mountain of debt? Yes, I do, and it just doesn't compute.
Right.
But it doesn't compute because they're banking on somebody else paying for it. And what this young lady didn't realize is that she's actually part of the 1% when you base that 1% around the world's wealth.
Yes.
She is the 1%.
She's the 1%. And you think about it. I mean, write to us below, comment below, write to us at friends@vfnkb.com. We want to be able to hear from you. But when you're thinking about this, that I really believe a four-year study in gender studies is not going to get you a job.
Yeah.
At a major industry. They're like, what did you study? He's like, well, there's only two. Anyway, so what did Dr. Thomas Sowell talk about
Dr.
here?
Because we've
got to look at what socialism is.
Yes,
right?
He's an economist, brilliant man who's being interviewed.
I believe he even worked for President Reagan.
Reagan, yeah, yes, yeah. Yes. And just has written a lot of great books on the economy. He was a Marxist before. I think he even believed in communism. And just by the facts, he said,
right.
Can't believe in this stuff anymore.
Right.
So it's okay to start that way. It matters where you end. But he's being asked about what these politicians, and one particular politician, Senator Bernie Sanders, has said and is continuing to say about socialism and why millennials are buying into this, you know, agenda, what he has to say about socialism. Take a look.
I'm hoping to use this conversation to apply the lessons of wealth, poverty, and politics to the current American scene and have you tell me what to think about certain statements and certain, well, you'll get the idea. Here's a quotation from Bernie Sanders, the Vermont senator who nearly won the Democratic presidential nomination. Quote, quoting Bernie Sanders, while there are some great corporations, this is the question of causation versus blame, while there are some great corporations trying to do the right thing, in my view, and I say this very seriously, the greed of the billionaire class, this is not supposed to be funny. I say this very seriously. The greed of the billionaire class, the greed of Wall Street is destroying the lives of millions of Americans. Close quote. What do we make of that?
It's astonishing, but I think even more astonishing is how many people voted for Bernie Sanders at a time where in socialist Venezuela, people are starving. They're breaking into stores in their desperation to get some food. They're crossing the borders into other countries to stave off starvation. In a country that has one of the world's largest supplies of oil, that they've managed to do that in that country. And people are so utterly insulated from facts that the fact that Bernie Sanders paints a very beautiful picture is all that matters.
Bernie's just not being honest because he's an intelligent man. But his whole life, I believe some of the reports are allegedly that he, in the beginning of his life, he was living in a communal situation, you know, that stuff from the 60s and all.
Yeah.
But you think about this, we have people writing us from Venezuela saying, pray for us. They're saying, this is what they tell us in Venezuela, that if we speak our mind, we risk imprisonment for 20 years. The police come on, this is what they told us, that if the police come on the bus, when we have the bus, they can steal your money, they can rape you, they can do all these things to you, and you can't say anything about it. They just, you know, but, I mean, it's crazy. Why would anybody in today see what socialism will do. Well, just take a look at Brazil. This is Brazil, somebody from Brazil talking about how socialism ruined their country. And by the way, they're turning around. But let's just look what happened to Brazil before their current president got into office. Let's take a look.
Many American millennials seem to be drawn to socialism. They came out in big numbers for Bernie Sanders in the 2016 presidential primaries. They rail against capitalism on their college campuses. They wear Che Guevara t-shirts to signal their socialist virtue. I know a lot about socialism. I live in Rio de Janeiro, and I work throughout Brazil as a journalist for a popular magazine. In the early 2000s, Brazil's economy was growing rapidly. The government had enacted economic and monetary reforms and divested holdings in some state-run companies, giving the private sector more room to breathe. Inflation, a chronic problem in Brazil, was dramatically reduced. Foreign investors poured into the country, eager to catch a portion of our expanding economy. The future seemed promising. But today, our economy is in shambles, unemployment and debt are massive, and powerful politicians are being investigated for involvement in the largest scandals of fraud and corruption in the country's history. What happened? In 2002, a socialist politician named Lula da Silva ran for the presidency. He was a socialist, but painted himself as a modern, cool kind of socialist. He would be the politician who would heal national divisions and unite everyone. He even had a nickname, Lulinha Paz e Amor, which means Little Lula Peace and Love in Portuguese. But the old message about the need for income redistribution to decrease inequality was still there. The media, academic elite, and celebrities assured Brazilians that by transferring the money from the rich to the poor could finally be richer. But the only ones who really got rich were Lula and his corporate and political friends. It only got worse under his successor, Dilma Rousseff. The socialists increased government spending, deficits, and debt. They called it a stimulus. They increased the minimum wage and the benefits of social programs. They call it social justice. They increased the salaries and retirement benefits of the civil service. They called it investing in the future. They handed out thousands of jobs in the government and state-owned companies as favors to their political allies. And they called it good governance. It worked for a while. Socialism always works at the beginning. But government spending just kept going up, and then Lula's socialist paradise fell apart and the economy fell with it. The outcome? From 2008 to 2015, government spending grew nearly four times as fast as tax revenue. The economy shrank 3.8% in 2015, the worst result in 25 years. That same year, a World Bank survey found Brazil's economy to be one of the world's worst. Out of 189 countries, we were the 16th hardest place to open a business, the 60th most difficult nation in which to register property, and the 12th most complex place to pay taxes. Economically and morally, the almost 15 years of socialist policies have greatly harmed Brazil. We also remain among the world's leaders in murder and robbery, and we rank near the bottom of industrialized nations in terms of education and healthcare. Americans take it for granted that they can be born into the lower class and reach the middle or even upper class. Many Brazilians take it for granted that they can't. But finally, some things are starting to change. There may be reason for hope. Today, more and more Brazilians see that capitalism and limited government are the only way forward. Thankfully for Brazil, Lula has been charged in several lawsuits for corruption, involvement in a criminal organization, influence peddling, money laundering, and obstruction of justice. Rousseff was impeached in 2016 for falsifying the government's finances and illegally using money from state-owned banks to run the government. This crisis prompted the new government to freeze federal spending, reduce the government's role in state-owned companies, and to encourage some of the massive federal workforce to resign. No one knows whether these basic measures will be enough to rescue Brazil economically. Truthfully, the damage has been so extensive it may take decades for the country to recover. But if we do, it won't be socialism that saves us. American millennials, take note. I am Felipe Moura Brasil for Prager University.
think about all these students who are embracing, these professors who are teaching these students to embrace socialism and selling them on this lie, had destroyed Brazil, this huge country. Well, we want to hear from you. Comment below, write to us at friends at VFNKB.com. We are hearing from you, Venezuela. We're hearing from you, Brazil. We know that you're speaking truth because you've experienced a great loss. Venezuela's in it right now. So good news for Brazil. Even though it was in major crisis, somebody came in and wished them peace and love and transference of wealth, and it destroyed their nation. Well, they have a new president now, President Bolsonaro.
Bolsonaro.
And they call him the Trump of Brazil. And you know how President Trump, when he got into office, that he embraced America, all of America, but he also embraced, you know, the Christian America. They said, come in and pray for me. Yeah, the pastors come in and pray for him. And he said he wanted to be known as the one president was the most praying president by the time he gets out of office. And you pray to the Lord. Lord will answer. I mean, that's Lord's right. Just looking for us to humble ourselves and say we need help. And when you're praying, no matter what people say of you, if you're talking to God and you're sincerely looking for help, he responds. Well, President Bolsonaro came to America to visit with Trump. As a matter of fact, we have a picture of him visiting with Trump in the Oval Office here.
He's giving him a jersey. They exchanged jerseys, soccer jerseys, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so the President Bolsonaro gave him a jersey. But it matters who your leaders are.
Yes.
It really matters because, as you see, the United States leads all over the world. Whatever we do first, other nations typically follow. And here you have the president from Brazil asking Christian leaders to pray for him.
Yes.
Think about it,
he did when
him.
He came here. That's what he said. He wanted to make sure that he meets with the president before. He wanted to make sure that the Christian pastors would come and lay hands on him and pray for him. Because they're coming out of, what, 15 years of being under what Venezuela is under for a short period of time.
Sure.
What, 7 years or so, I guess it is.
And it's interesting what they say is that socialism works in the beginning. You know, in the beginning. But then after a while, it falls apart.
Well,
Margaret Thatcher said that, you know, socialism is good until you run out of other people's money, you know.
And that's the thing is that it's just that people, it's based on greed and it's based on envy. The whole thing, every policy, you know, it's all the promotions, all the political statements, it's all about getting people to envy what other people have and say, that's my stuff. And that's our
entitlement. I deserve that. So give it to me.
One particular man talked about studying, you know, the fall of Russia and what happened, and they went into communism. He says that communism is the biggest temptation to a man's flesh. Socialism is the biggest temptation to a person's flesh, because your flesh is going, I don't want to work. Well, think about this. This is the American dream. The American dream is that you can work, you can learn hard and study actually what you're going to be doing in school so you can go do it, but work hard and you can know some people as well. And for example, let's say sports. You know, you work hard, you learn how to play ball, you learn how to do the different things you need to do to be sports. You know, you know somebody and they get you this person, and that person refers you. And next thing you know, you work in this league and that league. And one day, they get you out there to be able to play with the National Football League. But you know what? When you get on the field, you still have to play ball. If you're a quarterback, you got to run, you got to pass. If you're a receiver, you still have to receive. And that's what socialism is saying. We can get you on the field and you don't even have to play. It's a lie. You might not have to play for a month or two, but eventually as your whole nation falls, that embraces it. And every nation that has embraced it has always fallen every single time. Listen, I want to pray with you before you go. Comment below. Write to us at friends at VFNKB.com. Father God, I thank you for our audience. I bless them right now. Encourage them, Lord. Help them to just look within and look up and understand that with God, all things are possible. We can be the republic that you've called us to be. And dear God, we ask you, Lord, end abortion, send revival, send a third great awakening, we pray in Jesus' name. And don't forget how easy it is. Love God, love others, and lead others to do the same. God bless.
You've just been listening to the highlights from the VFN-TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNKB.com. And don't forget about our VFNKB app. No matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share it with your friends. Connect and sign up for the next webinar or attend our next summit at VFNKB.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.